We're going to continue the fun this morning that Jill began for us. And we're going to start with a game show. So, oh, wait. I should probably, before that, there are a couple announcements. I always forget to do these things. Okay? On the back of your bulletin, and as I'm talking about these announcements, I need a game show participant from this side and this side. So you be thinking about who you might be who are going to come up front here in a moment. So a couple of things to mention to you. First of all, if you've been here, the Path yard sale is something that you are familiar with, and so that has transferred from Benefiting Path to the Anchorage Breakfast Program, which is Patty Eastep's ministry in the city that feeds folks who are without housing or are in need 5 days a week. And so that's going to be coming up, and we'll need some help there. Actually, if there are a few folks who can help me after service move a few things out of the mezzanine, that'd be super helpful. Secondly, just to draw your attention to the Future Fund pledge card thing. We're trying to make this as super simple as possible, and so every week we're going to be sending out an email, or it'll be a part of an email. Just for the month of March, we want to try to get pledges in for what we talked about in terms of that envelope that you received and the Future Fund creating spaces and renovations that we want to do here around church. So if you have any questions about that, please let me know. But it would be super helpful to us and to the larger community if you could respond in some way. Lastly, Pastor Jane has a Keeping Kids Safe seminar that's coming up in March in a couple weeks. And so far, there's like one person who's responded with interest. And so if we want to do it, we want to do it for more than one person. Not that that one person isn't valuable. Everybody is valuable. But we want to make it worth our time and effort and also the presenters. So if you're interested in that, get back to Pastor Jane. All right. From this side, who's going to be my participant? Okay. Do you want to know what you're playing first? Okay. The object of this game, there's five questions, is to correctly name whose household responsibility the picture is going to represent, mine or my wife's. Julie Hillard, that was a little too anxious, but yes, you can come forward. You are representing the right side or my left of the sanctuary. Who on? Oh, come on now. Come. Yes. Ashley. Now see, what you don't know is that they're actually playing for a prize. And so whoever wins your side of the sanctuary gets a prize. Okay. So, I don't have buzzers or anything, so we'll just say whoever smacks this first and hardest. Very good. It's so fun. Okay, so there's going to be a picture that comes up, okay? And you just have to say Joshua or Ruby, okay? Smack, and then you answer, okay? There's four questions that are, the options are Joshua and Ruby. The fifth question is a bonus question. It's worth 3 points, okay? And it's a trick question. Okay. Hands on the pulpit. There we go. Now be gentle. I don't want you to hurt your hands. Okay. All right. Here's the first picture. Whose responsibility is it?
Josh.
Yes, that is correct. I'm the vacuumer. Anyway, all right. Second. Here we go. Ready? Go. Who's responsible? Oh, I don't know. Who was it? Ashley. Oh, totally Ruby. You bet. You don't want to eat my food. All right. My wife's going away this week, and she just went to Costco and bought me a whole bunch of pre-made meals. She knows me. All right. Third one. Whose responsibility is it to pay it? Yes. Did you even see the picture, or are you just hitting the thing first? Okay. All right. All right. 2-1. It's correct. I paid bills. And lastly, for the regular ones, whose responsibility is it to keep the schedule? Yes, that is true. 3-1. However, Ashley can take it all home if you get the trick question. Okay, whose responsibility is it to pick up the doggy stuff? Yes, my kids. All right, now here's the thing, because you're all kind and nice.
It's like the Ellen Show, that everyone wins.
Everybody wins. So you get to pick which flavor you want. There you go. Give them a hand. Does everybody really win on Ellen? Everybody wins. Everybody gets a participation trophy today. Hey, do me a favor, though. I know you're going to eat these right now. Please take your trash with you. Okay? The last, poor Dick Groff is going to come in here and vacuum this week, and he's going to find all these little plastic things everywhere. So you're not going to get any more toys if you don't do well today. So I walked in the office on Tuesday, and I put my little lunch in the little refrigerator, and Jane catches me out there and starts this hour and a half long conversation. The people I work with. But she basically said, I feel like you really need to follow up on what you talked about last week. I said, okay. I had been thinking about the same thing. So what we talked about last week, we talked about responding in boldness when we face opposition, but we also talked about all of us finding a spot in the community of faith, in the church family, to participate in, to contribute. And so what we both kind of felt like was that at the end of that, there wasn't, I mean, it was helpful to raise some things, but it wasn't exactly helpful in terms of next steps. And so what we want to talk about this morning is some practical next steps about thinking about being involved and contributing to this church family. And I use these illustrations this morning because I want to frame it in frame the way that we think about and that we understand being a part of the church with the metaphor of a household, okay? A household. And then we're going to hear some stories, and then Jane's going to come up at the very end and give some practical next steps. But before we talk about the household, what I'd like to do is help us to think about a metaphor that I think most of us, maybe many of us, it's at least present for all of us when we think about the concept of church. So if household is one paradigm, there's also another paradigm that we have that gives us mental imagery for how we think about and understand and then also participate in the church. And so before we get to household, the first thing I want to talk about is the church as a temple. Is the church as a temple. Now, as I kind of give the characteristics of what the temple represents from the Old Testament, I want you to place those against how you think about the church. Is the way that I describe the temple a way that you understand or think about, maybe even subconsciously, how you think about the church? Okay, so when we think about the temple's been the center of society for the Jewish people for as long as they've existed, right? Before the temple was the tabernacle, and so with the tabernacle, it would have been in the center of society, and then you would have had three tribes on four sides of the tabernacle, all facing the tabernacle. The tabernacle would have been the center of society for the Jewish people. Eventually, that becomes the temple, and it's still the center of society. We, as we've been talking about and looking in the book of Acts, when Passover happens, that's a whole bunch of people pilgriming to Jerusalem to be a part of a festival called Pentecost. So they're there for a reason, because at the temple, this is where the festival of Pentecost takes place. Earlier, when Jesus is crucified, it's done over the time of Passover, which is one of the other key festivals of the Jewish year. And that also takes place in Jerusalem around the temple. And so the temple is very much a central place and a central location for the people of Israel. Within the temple, I don't know if you remember the picture a couple weeks ago, but within the temple, there's this place called the Holy of Holies. So it's this place where the presence of God dwells, where the Ark of the Covenant was kept, the place where they thought the presence of God dwelled. Only the priests, only a specific group of people could enter that place. And then only a certain amount of times a year into the Holy of Holies, a priest would enter once a year. And then there would be certain sacrificial systems that take place outside of that place of the Holy of Holies that the priest would be a part of. But it was a class of people in a particular tribe that would do all of these things. So the temple was very much a location for where they would consider ministry to take place. So the ministry would take place at the temple. That's where sacrifices would happen. That's where you present sacrifices for sin offerings and all these other kinds of things. And so the temple is where this happens. Now, and I'm not picking here, but let's go to the next picture. So this is a larger church, modern day church. And so probably a rather large church. It looks a little bigger than ours. But so this is a campus that people pilgrim to, right? People drive, and even our campus, smaller, here, we come from five or six different school districts within Lancaster County. We're at a central location, and so even if you want to think of a topographical image of this location, you can think of it the same way. But people pilgrim here. People go because they're going to hear a professional message from a professional pastor, and they're going to be a part of professional programs put on by professional people who have been trained. And so, again, this is a place where we meet God, and again, this is a place where we would say or consider ministry would be happening. Now, when we think about the church as the temple, we begin to almost treat it like the temple. So the church then becomes this place where, is it okay to laugh in here? Clearly not. Can I smile? Maybe. Reverence sometimes is taking kind of the humanity out of places of worship. And there's reasons for that, and there's different theological traditions and things, and so I'm not just haphazardly saying that. There's reasons that go behind all of our liturgy and things, but sometimes the word temple is even in the name of some churches. And it leads to this kind of feeling that, I don't know exactly what I can contribute because I don't know what I have to offer. Like, I don't know if I'm smart enough or if I know enough. Like, this is always a thing that I hear anyway. I'm not sure that I just know enough to participate or to teach or to give my opinion or my perspective. That's for the people who know what they're doing. That's for, like, the priests, right? And this was actually a form of church for a very long time within the Catholic Church. The Reformation comes along because Martin Luther wants to take it kind of from the priest, so to speak, and give it to the people. Take the word that was just kind of consecrated to the priests and their interpretations of it and give it to the people. And so we see this kind of imagery for us, at least I think I do, where we look at the church as a temple. And I think that shapes how we then participate in the church. So if you think of the church as a temple, then you're going to participate in it in a certain way. But here's a question for us now. Let's transition metaphors, because obviously church is a temple. Temple's very Old Testament, very present in the Old Testament. But then is there a different paradigm in the New Testament for us to think about the church? And I think that there is. So what happens if we think about the church as a household? The church as a household. This is what Paul says in Ephesians 2:19. You are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household. Here's a list. Jeremy, if you didn't bring this up. Onesiphorus, Caesar, Cornelius, Lydia, the jailer who is unnamed, Aristobulus, Narcissus, Chloe, Stephanus, and there's more. These are names of, guess what? They're household names within the New Testament. These are the names of people of particular households that are mentioned by Paul and other letter writers. If you want to go back then, Jeremy, if you could. One time when we were doing covenant membership class here, the question came up, is this really biblical, you know, becoming a member of the church? And I didn't give a lot of thought to it at the time, but it came to me, and I thought, yeah, it is actually kind of biblical to become a member of a church, because it's all throughout the New Testament. People identify as members of so-and-so's household. When we talk about household in the New Testament, the household is very literally the church. It's where people met. They didn't have buildings, they didn't have meeting places or anything like that. They met in homes. And so when Paul or somebody writes and says, member of Chloe's household, I'll pick on that one because it's my daughter's name, it's beautiful. If so-and-so's household, that means they're a member of their church. That person who's being named is most likely the leader of that particular household or that particular church. Now think about how this paradigm shifts and shapes things for us. So instead of a central meeting place, one location, okay, a household is made up of many temples, because you know what else transitions when you get to the New Testament? It's no longer the temple being a place, but a temple now is a person. Okay, this is what Paul says, that we are temples of the Spirit. And so Jill's a temple, and Nate's a temple, and Carol's a temple, and Mike's a temple, and Joanne's a temple, and Phil's a temple. And within these households, then, you have various temples that are meeting together. And then when you think about the Old Testament paradigm, where there was this one place and you had to be, you know, you had to go through certain rites or whatever to enter the temple, think about the New Testament paradigm and how powerful it is. When I receive rosemary, I'm receiving rosemary into my temple. I'm receiving her and inviting her into the place where God dwells. And so each of us, when we encounter one another within households, we invite people into our household. This is a central thing of Christian hospitality. We believe that we're not just inviting them into our home, but that we're inviting them into our temple, the place where Christ dwells within us. So each time a person encounters you or encounters me, they're encountering Christ. They're encountering the presence of God, because the temple is where the presence of God dwells. This is a powerful imagery of hospitality. And it multiplies the temple's or the church's understanding as a temple like crazy. Now, in this picture, I don't know if you can see this or not, there's kind of little yellow dots. And so I've photoshopped this a little bit. But within Catholic icons, if you look at a Catholic icon and you see the person's head, if it has kind of this glow, this yellow glow around them, it insinuates or it signifies that they're filled with the Spirit or that they're a follower of Jesus. And so rather than thinking just the church as a temple, and this is the place that has kind of the yellow spot over top of it, this is a neighborhood. And this is a completely different way of thinking. This is a way of thinking that says, okay, within my neighborhood, there are people who are marked with the Spirit. There are households of faith. Now, within our neighborhoods, we might not even know our neighbors anymore. But this is a different way of us thinking about the church. It might be a good thing for us to wonder as we walk throughout our neighborhoods, kind of which door frames, so to speak, there's this yellow glow around. Who are our brothers and our sisters in the neighborhood? And so the household, I think thinking about the church as a household makes it a lot more earthy and a lot more common. It doesn't remove its power whatsoever. I don't think it removes the power or the significance of what it means to be a part of the people of God, but it certainly expands it beyond just the walls of a church. So I like the imagery of household, and the household imagery is what's used throughout the New Testament. And so I'd encourage you, as you think about the church, to think, I wonder which frame of reference that I have. This would be a good thing to talk about in home churches. How do I think about the church? Do I think about it kind of the Old Testament paradigm, or do I think about it in terms of it being a household? Now, I'm going to wrap up here in a little bit, and then we're going to have some stories. I use this imagery of household because and I used the game in the beginning because I want to help us think about what it then means to be a member of God's household. So this is where I'm tying it in to last week, where I said, I don't remember what I said. Hopefully you do. But somewhere along the line, if you consider this, now again, if you're visiting here with us this morning, you're kind of entering in on a conversation, and so I'm not applying these expectations to you, but if you consider this to be your spiritual home, your spiritual family, a place where you're committed, a place where you've committed to membership, okay, then your options of participation and contribution, you don't have any option not to contribute, okay? You don't have an option not to contribute, because contribution is what makes it is what defines being a part of a household. What I don't want to do this morning is I don't want any of you leaving and feeling guilty, like, oh, I'm just not doing enough. More so, I want you to be thoughtful about, A, if you're contributing, and two, if you're contributing in a way that's bringing you life. Because it might be we need to shuffle around a little bit and find places of service and things that bring us life, a way of contributing that brings us life here. But why I want to continue to talk about this today is because contributions to the household make a strong household. Right? Hopefully, I had a friend, her name's Lori. She was a mom of two kids, married. And at one point in time, when her kids were like in the teenage years or so, she felt like she was being taken advantage of. And so didn't feel like her husband or her kids were pulling their weight, contributing to the household like they should. And so she went on strike. She literally stopped doing anything for the three of them. And it was this wake-up call. And this happens every so often in my home, too, where we kind of need to recalibrate and make sure that we're all contributing to the good of the household. And it's not just because each of us need to play our part. Simon Sinek talks about the why being the place to start and the important an important place to define kind of where you start, why you do what you do. And it's important to start with the contributions that we make to the household, not just so we're all contributing, but so that the household itself is healthy and strong. I think of two things when I think of a healthy and strong household. I think one, and you can think of this in your own home, or you can think of this in the church, but when you have a strong household, you are launched from a place of strength into the world, into your jobs, into your occupations, into the things that you face. Okay? My wife, who has one of the hardest jobs that I think is imaginable in social work, is launched and is able to do what she does because she's being launched from a place of strength. Her household, I believe, is strong. So when you enter out into the place where you do what you do, and you can even be thoughtful about it this way. Think about it this way. When you're launched into the field of mission, because ministry doesn't primarily take place in the church, it takes place out in the world. Okay? Ministry takes place out in the world. So when we have a strong household, we are launched from a solid place into the world as temples to invite people to encounter the presence of God in us. When we don't have strong households, I know there are times when ours isn't as strong as it is, and that impacts how Ruby and I and how our kids do what we do in other places. There's a large difference if there's stuff that's going on at home or within our family life or larger family life. That impacts what's going on out there. But when we're launched from a place of strength, we can be sent on mission to be a part of God's work and God's kingdom in the world. Not only are we launched from But when we have a strong household, we return to places of peace. So whatever goes on in your job or in the world, at the hospital or in the classroom or wherever it may be, in your office, this is another thing Ruby says all the time. She's like, when she deals with all the stuff that she deals with, she says, this is not my life. This is my life. So when she comes home to a place of peace because there's a household that is strong. Now we need to think about this in terms of the church too. That this place and the strength of this place and this community of faith launches us out into the world to be living temples to receive people in the name of Jesus, but also is a place where we come back to then time after time after time again, to be a place of peace, to be a place of renewal, to be a place where we receive what we need in order then to be launched out again. It's a rhythm of life. It's a way of life. And this is the group of people that we do this with. So the hope is that each of us find a place to be meaningful contributors in this body. The hope is that each of us find a place, and I firmly believe that there is nobody in this room who cannot contribute meaningfully to the body. Okay? Everybody in this space can contribute meaningfully to the body. But I would suggest, too, that this is what discipleship is contributing to the body and allowing that contribution and that working alongside of one another in good and bad as we journey with one another through difficult times, as we work hard on things with one another, that and what we do with each other is discipleship. If we are not contributing to the body, if we're not investing in the body, we're missing out on a key element of what it means to follow Jesus and a key way in which you and I are discipled. Because it's in the interaction with one another as we work together that we participate in what it means to follow Jesus. And we see this paradigm even through the New Testament. When disciples are sent out, they're not sent out in ones, right? They're sent out in pairs. They're sent out with others. It's not just one person who's going to do something. There is a togetherness that is just central to the work of the gospel. So here's a question that I want to leave you with, and then I'm going to ask some folks to come up and share some stories. Have you found meaningful places, and I underline meaningful places, because I believe that there are places within the church that you can contribute that bring you life, that bring you life. Have you found meaningful places to contribute to your brothers and sisters in this church where you feel that you are investing fully into our household? Okay? I want to challenge those of you who consider this your community of faith. There is a difference between investing and investing fully. Okay? There's a difference between investing and investing fully. There's a difference between putting your hat into the ring when it's convenient and putting it into the ring when it's a sacrifice. Putting it into the ring when you feel like it and putting it in the ring when you don't. Okay? I don't always feel like vacuuming, but it needs done. The kids never feel like cleaning up after the dog. But unless I'm growing a garden back there, it needs done, right? And so this is what it means to be a part of a household, and I think this paradigm is super helpful for us as we participate with one another as a body, right? As brothers and sisters of the same household. How are we contributing? What are we doing to invest, not only invest, but to invest fully? And so I've asked three people to come up this morning to share some stories. And do you have a microphone, Jill? Great. And so the first person I want to ask up is Mark Simmons. And so most all of you are going to know Mark. And the reason I asked Mark to come up is because Mark's done just about everything that there is around here to be done. But I asked Mark to speak from the perspective of, okay, you've been here for a year?
44 years.
44? That's it? Slacker. I'm just kidding. So I've asked him three questions, and then I'll just let him respond. So what were some of your previous household responsibilities? And that's what I'm just calling our participation contribution to the church. And then my second question was, how did you know it was time to find a new responsibility and let somebody else take up your old responsibility? Because that happens within the community of faith. That happens within our own household. And then lastly, what piece of advice would you give to folks who've been here for a while about contributing to this household? All you. Go for it.